go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! The hour, and this is kind of like opposite day, I guess. I said I wouldn't be here. I am here, however. I would far prefer to be keeping the obligation I had made down in the Coal River Valley to try to add my voice to the objections to the ongoing blasting of Coal River Mountain. However, family matters. Not right-wing family values, the real ones. As I've told you, mentioned in the past, one of my daughters had her gallbladder out last year, and my other daughter is, the other daughter who is still in the house, I have three daughters, but the other daughter who is still in the house is about to have hers out. Now, teenage gallbladders don't usually just go, but this is West Virginia, and West Virginia is, as the science points, nothing of which I'm proud, a toxic place. So here in a few days, my daughter will be having her gallbladder out. But right now, in anticipation, or not in anticipation, but before it comes out, it's making her sick as hell. And so she's not feeling at all well, and Agnes and I thought, Nurse Agnes is in charge. But I didn't want to be away from home in case it was necessary to, go to the ER. God, I'd just like for her to be healthy. I'd like for her to stop being sick. There's no heartbreak quite like the heartbreak of a parent watching a child be miserable. So for that reason, I'm here. And thank you, those of you who are there. Maybe you saw my tweet or Facebook. Follow me on Twitter. For those of you who tweet, it's a really, really handy way to keep up with the program and cuts down on confusion, things like that, especially if you don't do Facebook. 140 characters. But at any rate, I'm here. And I'm glad I am. Because there's a... get out the frayed robe with the tattered moon and stars on it or anything, but it looks like initial analysis of what was going on in merry old England, our thoughts were spot on. It wasn't just random violence. More to it than that. It's a disconnected ruling class. Practically, let's see, Clegg, Cameron. Let's see, Cameron was in Tuscany. Clegg was being taught to play, one of them was being taught getting tennis lessons from a tennis pro that they'd brought with them from England. No, really. How let them eat cake can you get? But that's, and the whole government was on vacation. Boris Johnson, the mayor of London, on vacation. And, of course, the usual cries of, oh, this is thuggery. And, as is the case when, for instance, we have some gun nut go sideways in this country and shoot up a school. Oh, he was a loner. This is just unacceptable violence. Without ever trying to look for a root cause of the violence. The violence in England, the rioting, has root causes. I got an email from our good buddy Benedict a little bit before the show. he sent me a headline from The Guardian. If the rioting was a surprise, people weren't looking. Yes, indefensible, but not unexpected. Clear signs of deep problems in our youth were ignored as being a black problem. And it, well, there have been some profound blog posts. The most profound one that I have seen came from Penny Red, a blog there, as she wrote about the root causes of the unrest in England. And it's hard. Well, the English themselves, the folks in the UK, I mean, they have historical precedent to look back on in present time as a means of understanding this, if they care to understand. But again, governments, especially right-wing authoritarian ones, generally don't look for root causes. They just try to stamp out the threats to their personal property. But as is so often the case, whether we talk about Watts or the L.A. riots of the Rodney King era, or the riots that have taken place over the course of a generation periodically in England and in the London area, or in France, or in, well, they always seem to have a common thread. And that common thread is the fact that when the poor manifest their frustrations, they generally do it to themselves. It is like Sandra noted last night on the program. She said, somebody tell these people Westminster's that way. But ultimately, it is still, even where it happened, it's still a matter of wealth redistribution. Here's what I mean. These young people who would have to save for something like save every penny they ever made for the next 37 years to even think of buying a home in London. That's a real statistic I read earlier today. They've had their social safety net cut out from under them. They've had any hope of advancing themselves via education cut out from under them, again, by right-wing conservatives. It's what they do. And at that point, the culture itself becomes a tinderbox. And only a spark is required to let everything burn up. And so, in the looting that has taken place, please understand. It's possible you couldn't even get this clearly enunciated, but I'm trying to understand it myself. We're trying together. And we're also, of course, noting that it ain't ever going to happen in the new United States. No, sir. Our poor are very, very well anesthetized. Very well. The soma works. But anyway, so the looting takes place, and some kids carry out some flat-screen TVs and some mobile phones and God knows what. Some buildings get burnt. What happens? Businesses then turn in all of their losses to their insurance carriers. Who are the insurance carriers? Well, the insurance carriers are organizations that are largely run and invested in by the moneyed wealth classes. And the insurance carriers, in turn, although they will try to avoid it, and they will certainly try to minimize what they pay, do in turn have to pay out to cover the losses of the people whose homes were, or whose businesses were damaged, destroyed, or looted. And thus, wealth from the upper end i.e. the insurance groups, is forcibly redistributed downward on the lowest end of the spectrum in the form of flat-screen TVs and the like. In the middle of the spectrum, by forced payouts to people who had business losses. And it really does wind up being wealth redistribution. So, consider it in those parameters. As you watch it unfold. Other things? Oh, there are other things to occupy our attention. An abundance of them, actually. See, I said last night that I didn't feel like doing Moran Monday. Well, you know, I need to learn. The universe is a patient teacher sometimes. And as we consider the response of the poor and downtrodden in the United Kingdom, it is perhaps instructive to consider the wealth response to the poor here in this country. I offer you the Attorney General of Nebraska, a man by the name of John Bruning. John Bruning is running for governor of Nebraska. He is a... Come on. Oh, I'm sorry, he's not a gubernatorial candidate. He is a Senate candidate. Oh my God, he's running against Ben Nelson, who apparently lives with a wild animal on his head. Yeah, you remember Ben Nelson. The man who didn't want working people to have the right to form a union by checking a box on a card. Yeah, you remember the Employee Free Choice Act? Ben Nelson helped kill that, along with Blanche Link and Mary Landrieu and some of the other dinos in the Senate. Because, well, I remember it well, Harry Reid in the January of 2009 saying, we'll have a card check agreement by summer. But anyway, Ben Nelson, liberal! You know, and you know that's how the Nebraska AG John Bruning will characterize Ben Nelson. He's a liberal! He's a supporter of that one. Right? Yeah. I offer you the remarks of Nebraska Attorney General John Bruning, Senate candidate from the GOP, talking about poor folks.
Well, I'm up this week on Tuesday night, I'm in Broken Bow, and the road superintendent, he says we're trying to build a road in Sargent, Nebraska. And they've got all this equipment out there in Sargent sitting on the side of the road, and it's not doing anything. And what's going on? Well, somebody found a burying beetle, a little bitty beetle, and they stopped the whole project. One burying beetle. And so the biologist has to go out there, and he sets these traps, and you can see these buckets, right? And they put a rat carcass in the bottom, and the beetles crawl up, and they fall into the bottom of it. And they put all these buckets up and down the side of the road, and they capture all the burying beetles. The biologist goes out in the morning, grabs the beetles, and they take them 2 miles down, and they gently let the beetles out so that the beetles will survive. And some farmer, he's got a little more sense than the biologist for EPA or whoever it is, and the farmer walks out there with his video camera one night because the raccoons figure out the beetles are in the bucket. And it's like grapes in a jar, the raccoons. They're not stupid. They're going to do the easy way if we make it easy for them, just like welfare recipients all across America. If we don't incent them to work, they're going to take the easy route.
Oh, white folks. He just called. No, really. Can't make this up. Nebraska Attorney General just John Bruning just called welfare recipients in America coons. Ain't it lovely? I guess they don't even know, do they? So let's see, that's a boy. We've had boy. We've had, what else did we had it, tar baby! We've had boy, we've had tar baby. And now we've got coons. The welfare recipients in America are just like coons. We make it too easy for them. Pardon me if I'm just dumb. I want to go. I want to hear that again. That's just wow.
Well, I'm up this week on Tuesday night. Monday night. I'm in Broken Bow, and the road superintendent says we're trying to build a road in Sargent, Nebraska, and they've got all this equipment out there. Sargent's sitting on the side of the road, and it's not doing anything. And what's going on? Well, somebody found a bearing beetle, a little bitty beetle, and they stopped the whole project. One bearing beetle. And so the biologist has to go out there, and he sets these traps, and you can see these buckets, right? And they put a rat carcass in the bottom, and the beetles crawl up, and they fall into the bottom of it. And they put all these buckets up and down the side of the road, and they capture all the berry beetles. The biologist goes out in the morning, grabs the beetles, and they take them 2 miles down, and they gently let the beetles out so that the beetles will survive. And some farmer, he's got a little more sense than the biologist for EPA or whoever it is, and the farmer walks out there with his video camera one night because the raccoons figure out the beetles are in the bucket. And it's like grapes in a jar.
You hear them laugh?
The raccoons.
Hear all them.
They're not stupid. They're going to say they're going to
do Moses. You hear all them Midwestern white Nebraska folks. Ho, ho, ho. Yee-hee. Hoo-hoo.
To the easy way, if we make it easy for them, just like welfare recipients. And it's like grapes in a jar. The raccoons. They're not stupid. They're going to do the easy way if we make it easy for them, just like welfare recipients all across America. If we don't incent them to work, they're going to take the easy route.
My goodness gracious. I had to listen to it a second time. Whew! Dumb bastard. I really would like to see him be poor for a while. But, of course, he's a member of God's elect. God doesn't want him to be poor. That's why he made him white and Republican. But we're plenty busy tonight. Plenty busy. But let's take a moment to celebrate a win. You know, it was sometime last week that I told you about, and I guess I saved it for more in Monday, maybe. I'm not sure. It was, but I told you about the school board in Republic, Missouri, which is apparently somewhere near Kansas City, whose school board moved to action by a guy named Wesley Scroggins. Had banned the award-winning anti-war novel by decorated World War II veteran Kurt Vonnegut Jr., Slaughterhouse-Five. Because, as Wesley Scroggins, reminder, Scrog is a word invented by Kurt Vonnegut to replace the word F. That ends in K, you see. Wesley Scroggins said it went against biblical principles.
Well, we have a win. We've got one for the W column, and you know what? They're few enough and far between that we have to celebrate every last one of them. No, the Republic, Missouri School Board has not rescinded its ban of Slaughterhouse Five. But the Kurt Vonnegut Museum, and as our buddy Horst noted, I'm just happy to know there is such a thing as a Kurt Vonnegut Museum. The Kurt Vonnegut Museum has announced that it will donate copies of Slaughterhouse Five to 150 Republic, Missouri school students. Thanks to what's being called a generous donation from an anonymous donor. Julia Whitehead is the executive director of the Vonnegut Library. It's the Vonnegut, not museum, but the Kurt Vonnegut Memorial Library in Indianapolis, Indiana, which is, of course, Kurt Vonnegut's birthplace and hometown. He often noted that the two most famous people to come out of Indianapolis were, before him, John Greenleaf Whittier, the Hoosier poet. There is, in fact, though, a Kurt Vonnegut Memorial Library in Indianapolis, Indiana. They are giving away 150 of the copies of Slaughterhouse Five to the school students in Republic, Missouri. Julia Whitehead, executive director of the Vonnegut Library, said the following in an interview with the Huffington Post. All of these students will be eligible to vote, and some may be protecting our country through military service in the next year or two. It is shocking and unfortunate that those young adults and citizens would not be considered mature enough to handle the important topics raised by Kurt Vonnegut, a decorated war veteran. Everyone can learn something from his book. The Kurt Vonnegut Memorial Library is also working in tandem with the American Civil Liberties Union, because there is Supreme Court precedent. The Supreme Court having said several years ago, 1982, that school boards can't ban or remove books from the library, quote, simply because they dislike ideas contained in those books and seek by their removal to prescribe what shall be orthodox in politics, nationalism, religion, or other matters of opinion. Ms. Whitehead also quoted Kurt Vonnegut himself. All these people talk so eloquently about getting back to good old-fashioned values. And I say, let's get back to the good old-fashioned First Amendment of the good old-fashioned Constitution of the United States. And to hell with the censors. Give me knowledge, or give me death. Hear, hear. So we won a battle, a skirmish, really. We won a skirmish with the stupid. Wesley Scroggins must be praying with one hand and masturbating with the other, even as we speak. But it's a win. It is most assuredly a win. And I like those, as I know you do as well. David in South Carolina, a member of our fraternity of Davids, writes in and says, remember this compassionate quote from South Carolina's ex-lieutenant governor, Andre Bauer? Andre Bauer said a couple of years back, my grandmother was not a highly educated woman,
But she told me as a small child to quit feeding stray animals. You know why? Because they breed. You're facilitating the problem. If you give an animal or a person ample food supply, they'll reproduce. Especially ones that don't think too much further than that. And so what you gotta do is you gotta curtail that type of behavior. They don't know any better.
Former Lieutenant Governor Andre Bauer on feeding poor people. He is, of course, a member of the Republican Party. David's from South Carolina also noting, South Carolina is gaining a new congressional district. Bauer plans to run for it, and it is, of course, a GOP district drawn by a GOP legislature signed by the current tea cracker governor.
You gotta stop feeding them. They don't know any better. They'll just breed. Jesus.
So out in Nebraska, we've got a senatorial candidate referring to poor people as coons. And back in South Carolina, they're going to breed. They can't help themselves, can they? It really is. It's just past them. It is beyond their ability. To comprehend that their very nature, these Repiglickans, these Tea Partiers, that their very nature is racist in essence. And so it is that, I want to introduce a new segment on the program. In light of the fact that it is the, let's just do this. You may recall last week we had a little discussion about the missing letters, or the hidden letters, actually. Not missing, they're hidden. Of Mr. and Mrs. Robert E. Lee. Well, it turns out that Michelle Bachmann, a few years back, put out, it was 2002 when she put out a must-read list of books on her website. Now, to be fair, the website included, the list included the Declaration of Independence, the Federalist Papers, stuff like that. Now, I would bet you a dime to a $100 bill that Michelle Bachmann has never, ever, ever read the Federalist Papers. Who wrote Federalist Number 10, Michelle?
A Federalist!
But included in her reading list was a book called Call of Duty.
He said duty.
Call of Duty. The Sterling Nobility of Robert E. Lee by J. Stephen Wilkins. Contained in Ms. Bachmann's book, one of her favorite books, a must read. It is a must read, I'll tell you. Sorry, wrong accent. But this passage in Call of Duty, the Sterling Nobility of Robert E. Lee, this passage. Northerners were often shocked and offended by the familiarity that existed as a matter of course between the whites and blacks of the Old South. You know, familiarity. On the one hand, you say, boy, come over here and bring my riding horse. And he says, yassa, massa. You know, that kind of familiarity.
Northerners were often shocked and offended by the familiarity that existed as a matter of course between the whites and the blacks of the Old South. This was one of the surprising and unintended consequences of slavery. You know, familiarity with the upstairs maid. Familiarity. Slavery, as it operated in the pervasively Christian society, which was the Old South, was not an adversarial relationship founded on racial animosity. We only whipped them when they got out of their place. It was not an adversarial relationship founded on racial animosity. In fact, it bred on the whole not contempt, but over time, mutual respect. You know, if and we don't whoop them enough, they may rise up and kill our white asses. Mutual respect. It bred on the whole, not contempt, but over time, mutual respect. This produced a mutual esteem of the sort that always results when men give themselves to a common cause. The credit for this startling reality must go to the Christian faith. Amen and amen. Well, with that, the horn, in honor of the sesquicentennial of the outbreak of the recent unpleasantness, otherwise known as the War Between the States, otherwise known as the War of Northern Aggression, otherwise known as the Civil War, the horn is proud to present this sesquicentennial horn history moment. We bring you now one of the lost letters of that man of sterling nobility, General Robert E. Lee. Receiving his letter from his beloved wife back in old Virginia, who wrote to General Lee as follows. My dearest Robert, I have news in my hand via the newspapers that you are doing things the Yankees never thought possible by our troops. I'm so very happy you are doing all you should and more to protect our southern homeland and way of life. Speaking of our homeland and lifestyle, it has come to my attention that you are all too fond of one Negro woman that came to be your possession via your marriage to me. I shall be succinct and direct, Robert. If this attention given to the legs and ankles of one female slave by your eyes, I shall be very disappointed, very disappointed. And, my dearest, if I become disappointed, my father becomes doubly so on my behalf. His wrath would extend to the placement of goods and chattels once mine and his before that in other hands than yours, darling Robert. I can't imagine that a man, a general so brave and so brilliant as to defeat the filthy Yankees, wants to lose his home and with it his status in the world over casual glances at a negress. Eternally, your loving and devoted wife, Martha. This has been a Civil War History Sesquicentennial Minute, brought to you by the Horn, who reminds you, all this might be so much better if we'd only hanged that dirty, rotten old son of a bitch, Robert E. Lee. Tune in next week, when we will read again from the lost letters, the hidden letters of General Robert E. Lee as he protests his innocence and the fact that there is no way that a six-year-old baby with a gray beard living on his plantation could possibly be his own. My dearest Martha, I recommend you sell that freak of nature quickly. I would write more, but I must away, as there's more Yankees yet to whoop. Dear God. So, we've got... And then, by the way, just a gentle reminder that it doesn't all happen in the South. I take you to Red Wing, Minnesota. Minnesota, the home of Michelle Batshit Crazy Bachman. Where at Red Wing, Minnesota High School, the students wanted a tropical theme for their dance. Some 60 students at the predominantly white school, however, apparently didn't care much for the tropical theme and thus, came to school dressed for Wigger Wednesday. These white children, having dressed themselves up as what they perceive black people to dress like, oversized sports jersey, low-slung pants, baseball hats cocked to the side, and do-rags on their little toe heads. I trust we all know what the word Wigger means. It is a derogatory slang term for some white person who is deemed to have gone too far in shedding his white or her white privilege and adopting mannerisms, language, fashions, and stereotypes that are generally associated with black culture. By the way, the school not only tolerated but permitted Wigger Wednesday. They are now embroiled in a federal lawsuit, a class action. Former Red Wing High School student Quara Pruitt, who is black, has filed suit in Minnesota federal court on behalf of an unnamed class of all students who experienced discrimination as a result of Wigger Day. That class may expand to somewhere around 40 or more students. The superintendent of the school district denies that it has created a racially hostile environment by permitting Wigger Day. They had it in 2009. They had it again in 2010. Beth Borgen is the principal at Red Wing High School. Karsten Anderson is the school district superintendent. Why, we didn't create a racially hostile environment. We were trying to be welcoming of those people and the way they dress. It has gone on at Red Wing High School, by the way, for years. Years. So that is where the program begins this evening. It will, of course, go other places depending on where you choose to take it. A couple of emails coming in. You know, we try to raise a minimum of $60 a night to keep the horn going from month to month. We received kind contributions from Darlene and from Chad. And from Susan. Chad wrote in
saying, I'm just happy to have you as a friend on Facebook, and I love the show. Tell folks that Chad from Connecticut supports the Horn family. It's great to sit on the porch and chat with a spiked sweet tea. Thank you, Chad. Thank you very kindly. Darlene added, I'm glad to hear the donations are helping. I guess I would say to the Horn family of listeners, whether by filibobster or through your conversations with Sue, Susan, Sandra, Jim, Tracy, Mark, Juanita, and others, you're always delving into the nitty-gritty of difficult social and political topics. You and your callers see things from such different angles and in such deep and profound ways, it is unlike anything else I've ever heard on terrestrial radio, internet radio, or TV. Your program is a news source on oh so many different levels. Even on days when I think I'm up to speed on what is going on in the world, you and your callers always find plenty of stories I missed. Love the humor you throw in, too. We all need a good laugh mixed in with the learning. Every evening we can get it. Also, you and your family are real, down-to-earth, good people who are truly living in the trenches there in West Virginia. All I can say is thank you and your family for taking the rest of us along in fighting the good fight. Looking forward to tonight's program. Darlene. Thank you, Darlene. So the if you'd like to contribute to help keeping this going, the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. And we do appreciate and need your support. It's all right there. So is the snail mail address if you prefer not to deal with eBay. eBay? They own PayPal. See? If you prefer not to deal with PayPal, owned by eBay, the snail mail address is there as well. 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, West Virginia, 25801. So that's the starting place. Lines are open. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. See how easy? Email rolls into Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, at gmail.com. We'll take a little break and come right back. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
It's Tuesday, August 9, 2011.
You tell them that this old woman's hot down here, and not just because of the heat.
Tempers boil as water runs out and the drought deepens in the Lone Star State.
These women have walked from Somalia. They've walked like 15 to 30 days to bring their children here to get them food and water and health care.
Devastating famine spreads in East Africa. New rules for heavy trucks. Japanese officials withheld radiation information from residents. Plus, Al Gore calls BS, literally, on the climate change denial industry.
And then volcanoes, bull****. And then sunspots, bull****. It's not getting warmer, bull****.
Well, we can hardly be surprised that Al Gore is working blue. All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
And 69% of the American people now say it's likely scientists have been lying about their own research. We win.
Yes, you lied, so you won. No wonder Al Gore is calling b****. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, it's getting hot and it's getting ugly out there.
It most certainly is, and we are paying the costs both in this country and abroad. First, over to Texas.
It is hot and we don't have any water.
Residents in one North Texas town are furious that their city has run out of water, literally. Texas is now officially in its deepest drought in recorded history, extending across 99% of the state. But after decades of neglecting to update their town's aging water infrastructure, city officials in Kemp, Texas, about 40 miles south of Dallas on Sunday, temporarily shut off the taps to its 1,100 residents after 14 waterline breaks in a matter of weeks drained the town's water supply.
107 degrees in my blood because you people and those people down there will not get off their duck and fix this stuff.
We have no water.
You have to have water.
No money put into infrastructure? No water. Go figure.
The city is providing very limited bottled water in the meantime. The drought and the unprecedented heat wave have been so bad, it's literally breaking aging infrastructure around the state, from water mains to buckling roads to the aging electrical grid. Prices in the Texas deregulated electricity market have jumped 40%. But as bad as it is in Texas, it's far worse in Africa.
If they can get help, there is hope. There is hope.
The famine in East Africa is rapidly expanding to new regions in Kenya, Ethiopia, and Somalia, says the United Nations, amidst the worst drought in 60 years. U.S. airlifts have begun to deliver food aid, but they warn that thousands more refugees are streaming daily into already overwhelmed refugee camps. Dr. Jill Biden, wife of Vice President Joe Biden, is in Somalia and, in an interview with CNN, asked for Americans to donate to the relief effort.
I just couldn't imagine, being a mother myself, that someone wouldn't help my children. And I think that's why these women have walked from Somalia. They've walked like 15 to 30 days to bring their children here to get them food and water and health care.
You can help. Go to USAID.gov. That's USAID.gov for more ways that you can help. New rules for heavy trucks. The Obama administration announced the first ever fuel efficiency standards for heavy trucks, buses, and other heavy-duty vehicles on Tuesday. The new standards will gradually increase fuel economy between 10 to 23% starting in the model year 2014 and will save an estimated $50 billion in fuel costs. Over to Japan, the Japanese government is again under fire for its handling of the aftermath of the disaster at the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant. The New York Times reports that Japanese officials apparently withheld information from the public about the danger of radiation exposure, allowing residents in Fukushima and surrounding areas to evacuate into regions directly in the path of radiation plumes. According to some current and former government officials, it was an attempt to limit the size and impact of large-scale evacuations and to protect the politically powerful nuclear industry.
What? The government lied to its people about nukes? I find that hard to believe, Des.
Finally, former Vice President Al Gore had some choice words for the lucrative climate change denial industry over the weekend at the Aspen Institute's Forum on Communications and Society. He excoriated polluting corporations and their minions for using the same denier techniques employed by the tobacco industry to deny scientific evidence and manipulate news coverage.
And some of the exact same people, by name, I can go down the list of their names.
It worked for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce for the tobacco industry. Why not do it again for the climate change denial industry? For more information on that story, including the unedited version of Al Gore's tirade and the other stories we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, a donation is appreciated to help sponsor The Green News, which you can download anytime via iTunes and which you can follow on the Twitters at Green News Report. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Okay, so we're starting hour two a little bit early. About 6 minutes, well, it's precisely 6 minutes before the hour, as I said that. And we will be going to the phones presently. Just a couple of things real quick, like... One, for those of you looking for ways to expand the listenability of the horn, I got a tweet, and, you know, my Twitter account's just Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, feel free to follow. I follow back, I'm a religious follower back, unless it's a wingnut, and then I just block them. But I got a tweet from Alan in Montana, noting that... the Zia Live Light app, and that's XIIA Live Light, L-I-T-E, works really well for streaming the horn on the live horn stream on your Android mobile phone. Just hook up to Wi-Fi over there, wherever, you know, just get on somebody's Wi-Fi and you can stream away, or you can even stream a little bit, depending on who you're with. Now, this is an unpaid recommendation. Sprint is by far the most rational and reasonable of the mobile carriers, because their bandwidth, their wireless bandwidth, is unlimited, which means as long as you've got their 3G, you can listen to the horn anywhere. Verizon, T-Mobile, and AT&T are bandwidth Nazis. Just saying. But wherever you can hook up to Wi-Fi, well, then that's no longer a consideration. And on your mobile device, your mobile Android device, Zia Live, XIIA Live, is the way to go. And you can get that in the Android marketplace. It's really, really easy. So thanks, Alan, for letting me know that. I really appreciate it. And that's the beauty. That's where the future is going. Internet radio. And it will be over your phone, which means you can have it with you in your car, which means you can listen to it instead of terrestrial radio, which is cool. So there's that. And thanks, by the way, to our good friend Michael in Norway for his kind recent contribution to keeping the horn going in September. September, we'll worry about October. You know, it's not one day at a time, but it's more like 1 month at a time, and that's how it has to work. So thank you. Thank you very much, Michael. That means that well, those are three slots on the Thrifty 250. And if we can get at a minimum three more, we'll be pretty much done for this evening. And I can hush about all of this stuff. Right? Right. So let us go straight to the phones and see what's happening there. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Brother Bob.
Brother Albert.
Oh, I'll tell you, that makes me want to get one of those phones. That really does. Something like that, I can totally see the application and how just beautiful that would be. It's almost like, that's like digital snus right there.
Yeah.
that's like... So I got my voting in today.
I wanted to ask, since you are one of our Wisconsin correspondents, how was the polling place today?
Just as it always is. It's a small town, you know that, isn't it?
Yeah.
It was, plenty of us. You know, I mean, I got a knock on the door from a pig licking, and I opened the door because they saw me looking out the window, and I'm kind of, not a coward, but I don't feel like talking to a Republican. So she asked me for, if she can have if Kapanky could have my support, and I say no. So then, I thought, all right, what else do you want from me? Then she starts asking me all these questions, and I'm like, lady, don't even get me started. I'm not answering a single one of your questions. So I didn't. I just sat there and, I gave her all misinformation. So do that. If they do come to your door, don't give them all the information. Don't let them know. Let them be blind and ignorant. Because they're already that way anyway. So why should they know where you live and you're a Democrat or this or that? Why? Not even let them know. Just pretend that you're disenfranchised. That's how I do it. Anyway, because my neighbors, they're one of them kind of people. But I got the Knox, and, there were tons of volunteers out, which is always a good sign, especially on this recall. There was a... I don't even know. I can't even tell you how many little door hangers I got. Probably about four or five of them. Every other day there was another one in there, and then they'd come in the mail too. I did have a Democratic pollster who I certainly told my information to, whatever, sort of play parties, whatever. But, I think it's going to be all right. I think we're going to annihilate. You got to remember, the people here are pretty, Walker slapped us in the face. He cold cocked us. These people wake up. These people aren't like the people in Texas, who sit there and, Ron Paul, get rid of the government, get rid of the government.
Why ain't I got no water?
Where's my water? Yeah, come on now. Where's your water?
You voted to get rid of it.
Not only did you vote to get rid of it, you have no problems with corporations coming in, pumping it out of the ground, selling it back to you, and then selling it.
To work the ongoing metaphor that you and I are so fond of, I can't wait to see Texans walking around in their Fremen still suits.
Equity in Somalia? Who's Somalia? Somalia. Yeah, that's right.
Albert, stand by. Hopefully this will pass in a moment, but you're breaking up for some reason or another. Well, not to worry. I think maybe we can make it better there. Okay, let's see if it's any better yet.
That better?
Much.
Much? Okay. Excellent. Yeah. Sorry about that.
No, it wasn't your fault. It was my fault.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Bob.
But no, I just... Why, Governor Perry, you've got your still suit fashion desert fashion.
Where did you learn such a technique? Oh, he's the chosen one, isn't he? Goodness, isn't he?
Oh, for he is the Kwisatz Haderach.
Not these people. There's no way. That's true.
No.
I'm going to lose black on that. That's not real. That's just not real. I couldn't handle it.
No, they're Jawas or sand people or something. I don't know.
Yeah, they're the Harkonnen. That's who they are.
Well, true. Oh, yeah, my Baron, really your wild. Beautiful hatefulness.
Oh, pustules. Your skin is so beautiful. Oh, I just want to love it forever. Yeah, I mean, and that's what, Walker, his ass is gone. I don't know about Kapanky. We do have, there's a strong...
Well, I read some quote from Kapanky where I guess he said his only hope was if 50,000 Democrats stay the hell home or oversleep or something.
Yeah, wouldn't that be... Yeah, well, that's not happening. I mean, what'd they think? They thought they could burn down. That was in La Crosse. That's just down the way, right? Did you see that? I mean, that made you know, a little bit national news. But there was they burnt down the freaking Move On Wisconsin, whatever. Not Move On. It's We Are Wisconsin, whatever group for, you know, that kind of orchestrating their aspect of the recall election. They're doing their efforts in their Southwest Wisconsin part. They burnt it down. That was arson. The whole thing was gone. And you're going to try to tell me what? I mean, you know, then don't forget, this is La Crosse, Wisconsin. You know, and don't send your kid to school here, because they'll wind up with a couple of beers, and the next thing you know, they'll wind up in the river. That happens here all the time. But there's no serial killer. There isn't one. There's only been, you know, one or two people a year, every, you know, boys, about same age, same look. Oh, they just have it, and they leave their wallet on the shore. Oh, there's no serial killer. They just want to go for a swim in November in the Mississippi. Okay. Anyway, so yeah, you know, so if they don't find it, don't be shocked. You know, there was a sign out in another, you know, somebody from California or Seattle or something, there was a sign, if you want to get away with murder, go to La Crosse, Wisconsin. So I don't, you know, don't be too, don't be looking for results of the arson test. But I'm telling you, why would it burn down like that? Come on now. It was a raging fire for 12 hours or something like that. It was ridiculous. You know, so, you know, there's only certain ways you get that to go, you know what I mean? Put a little bit of that, you know, there's an airport over here, there's military stuff, you know, you never know, give me a friend, you got any of that JPH-10, whatever it is, that jet propulsion, solid rocket fuel crap that burns so hot, it melts, yeah, so yeah. Whatever. Anyway, yeah.
I did see something that was somewhat disturbing. I saw a Brad blog update on my Twitter feed just a few minutes ago, Albert, noting that there will be no hand recount of the optical scanned ballots. How did you vote today? What kind of? I mean, was it video game voting or?
No, I don't do that. I think the ladies are starting to know, because they did that to me once already. They gave me the machine and I was like, but like, well, we can't because we already put you in. So from that, I really make sure. I always do paper, checkbox, make a little box. You know, it's really easy in Wisconsin. It's almost, you almost feel like, really, this is official? Okay. And you put your little X in the box and you make the X and that's it. So paper ballots all the time. My wife, Renee, she does the same deal. So, you know, the machines are there and I won't be, you know, of course, we know about the machines. We've known about the machines for how long now? We've almost known about the machines, you know, half as long as I've been alive. Come on now. Man, trust me, these machines. And of course they're not going to do a recount. You know, because how else would they miraculously find 90,000 ballots? You know what I'm saying? That's what they'll do. But, oh, look, we found 90,000 ballots.
Yeah, where is that woman actually still, I mean, she's sitting there, she's going to be counting ballots tonight, isn't she?
I believe she's still around. Yeah, of course, you know, she's like Wisconsin Catherine Harris. You know, so she's going to be around, and, you know, we did happen, maybe, that wasn't the one that got the drunk driving with the children in the car, was it?
Oh, okay.
I don't know, one of those. Yeah, we lost, we did lose a brave Republican patriot who, you know, talking about her family values and caring about her children and about the deficit, and then she gets caught with her kids in the car, drunk.
Oh, those family values.
It's just outrageous to me, driving drunk with your kids in the car. I mean, whatever. I mean, I just don't. It's just ridiculous, you know. So then, it's the other thing, you know, I was sitting there and I had to go. I had to actually drive into La Crosse today to get my car on a stupid thing, mirror, blah blah blah, that they didn't fix. So I went in there and went to fix. And the Pete, who's my mechanic, great guy, you know, he sits there and he laughs, you know, because he gets his part from GM. You know, GM comes in and brings his part to him. He's like, GM from Made in China. And he throws it down and kind of shakes his head and, you know, chortles. Think about that for a second. Parts, GM parts, made in China, being put into cars here. That's just sad. That's just
well,
sad.
There was what was the name of that massive parts supplier that GM broke on the rack of anti-unionism?
Fastenal.
No.
That was one of them.
No, but it was huge. They insisted that they take pay cuts from like $25 an hour to $9 an hour.
Who are those guys?
Oh, I read that. But there was a reason. So they could start buying parts from China that were made by slaves chained to tables.
Yes, sir. Exactly.
Because that's, you know, capitalism.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You know, that's the thing. It's capitalism bullcrap. This is just ridiculous. You know, you sit there, you know, it's funny too, I just want to go kind of quick go back to what Texas is dealing with. You know, Texas is dealing with this and these people, you know, and they're making poor Al Gore say bullshit and scream bullshit and bullshit, bullshit. Because they're, you know, they're using, you know, of course, we're all those petroleum companies, all, you know, in Texas, and they're the ones that put the money into, you know, getting rid of, you know, there's no such thing as global warming. And now they're dealing with it. I mean, aren't they dealing with it? Isn't that part of climate change that we're going to see these kinds of things? It's like, you know, yeah, they're almost close to the same, you know, attitude. You know, what happens when Florida starts turning into a full beach? You know, because it's not much more than that as it is now. There's no topsoil in Florida. Come on now. What happens when it starts really getting hot, really starting to dry out? Come on now.
And the only rain you get comes in the form of hurricanes.
Yeah, hurricanes. But that's privatized, so you can't collect any or drink it because, you know, the corporation owns it. Because you sold your water rights, because, you know, it's the things you got to sell. It's nice to see, you know, how stupid the stock market is, and that beautiful thing. Down 700, up 500, because they buy. You know, it's almost the same game over and over and over again.
Oh yeah, today on Wall Street was a fire sale, Albert.
Yeah, of course.
The news story I saw said, 400 point gain in a wild day of trading.
Yeah, I thought it was 500.
Maybe it was 500. Maybe that's how it closed. But not to get all crystal ball-y or prophetic or anything. But didn't I think I said something last night about how. Even though we can't find stimulus monies to put people back to work, with Bank of America going south, you can bet your ass there will be some sort of talk about a new stimulus.
Mm-hmm.
Lo and behold, there it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's not going to be the right stimulus. It's like when I looked over at the guy that was sitting next to me, you know, at the auto place, you know, I sat there and I say to him, you know what I say, I'm the broken record, solar panels on every roof. Let's start building them here. I mean, granted, I've never had anybody sit there to my face and say, no, we can't do that.
Yeah, that's just dumb.
I mean, no. That's stupid. Why would we want to do that?
Well,
that's
like this group that Van Jones is now leading, Rebuild the Dream,
mm-hmm.
powered by MoveOn.org.
Mm-hmm.
They have a contract for the American dream.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Now, I'm going to read this, Albert. I'm going to read this not just to hear my own voice roar, but as I read these, just use a little mental pencil and checkmark each thing if it just so happens that over the course of the last few years you've heard we, the Horn family, talking about this back when nobody was. One, invest in America's infrastructure. I seem to recall notes from Albert, David in Tennessee, all kinds
Everyone.
Of. Yeah, we need to work. We need to get to work on the bridges. Remember the bridge collapse in Minneapolis, right there before the Republican National Convention in what 2000 was that? Oh, was that? No, that was 2008.
Yeah.
Number two, create 21st century energy jobs.
Bing.
Yeah, there's another check mark. Three, invest in public education.
Bing.
Yeah, if only you had Reverbo's bell, this would work so much better, wouldn't it?
I don't have a bell.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Four, offer Medicare for all.
Ping.
Five, make work pay. There's a story. Yeah, ping, ping. There's a story out today that says a woman has to get a Ph.D. to earn the same amount of money that a man who only has a bachelor's earns. Number six, secure Social Security.
Ping.
Seven, return to fairer tax rates.
Ping.
Eight, end the wars and invest at home.
Ping, ping, ping.
Yeah. Nine, and this is kind of esoteric, but God knows we've talked about this, tax Wall Street speculation.
Ping.
Ten, strengthen democracy.
Bing. A little vague. I wish there was a little more in there.
But. Yeah, but, well, you know, eliminate the video voting, video game voting machines. Go to public financing of political campaigns, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that ding ding. So
the other thing is politicians.
But that's coming out in 2011, and we've only been talking about these things for 5 years.
At least. Yeah.
Now, either we've all got tattered purple robes with frayed moon and stars on them, or it's just a matter of the Horn family being about 1,900,000 miles out in front of the curve.
Yes, sir. It's the cutting edge. It's the cutting edge. It's a little wild sometimes, but that's where we are. And I'll tell you, that's why, you know, something like, you know, like you don't realize how many people you're actually influencing it, because everyone who listens to the Horn goes and talks to their friends. You know, and then people, you know, that's how it happens. You know, like, you know, we sit here and I go and I'll talk to about three more people by the time the day is over, and I'll probably rant and go on a tirade or two, and then they'll probably go and say, oh, you know, maybe I'll change my mind a little bit or what have you, whatever. But that's how it works. You know, so it's like, yeah, you keep going on and on, I'll get my donation in there too today, and, you know, we'll meet, the funding needs as we will, and, as we can. And, you know, it's just, you know, the impacts are coming. You know, that's what we were talking about. We talked about this too. Collective conscious. How long? How long? You know, you put it out there. 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 Next thing you know, I mean, listen to that contract with America. That's a real contract with America. That's a contract that's going to actually, you're going to turn around at the end of the day, you're going to have something. Not like a Republican contract with America, and you turn around, you don't got nothing. You got ugats. That's what you got. And it's just, I just wish that these people that were in our economic brackets would, you know, who you do see with the GOP signs, I really just wish they would sit there and open their eyes for 10 seconds. Because, I mean, you know, the independents and, you know, a lot of libertarians, too, you know, you said the libertarians, they're still on the left, you know, but they don't want to be, they don't want to sound like a liberal or something stupid like that. But those people, you know, you said, I was listening to the radio this morning, you know, on the way in, and he's sitting there talking about how he was a libertarian, and he went to college, and then the economic, you know, thing collapsed, and now he's a socialist. Because he realizes that, you know, we talk about that slavery that them good old South and Michelle Bachmann, you know, and all these Republicans, what they really love, you know, they love that slavery. Well, if you work for a corporation and some CEO is making, you know, $500 million a year, that's the massa, isn't he? Isn't that the massa? What happens if you step on that guy's shoes in the elevator by accident? Well, you hit him with your mop, you hit his pant leg, you know, his $2,000 suit pant leg with your mop, when you're mopping around. You think you're gonna have a job? That's about the same thing. I mean, you know, you're just going to wind up, you know, and it's the thing, you get unemployed in a world like this.
Right, and the vast majority of working people are not working under a contract. They are not working with a collective bargaining agreement, which means that by definition their employment is what is called at will, Albert, which means that they can fire you or you can quit for any reason or no reason. You know, most people don't really see the I can quit any time I want to as a real perk.
Yeah, isn't that, you're free, you're free. I mean, that's the thing, it's like, you know, but you look at these corporations or you look at these companies, you know, like I tried to get, look at the co-op, look at that co-op.
Yeah.
That shop, little shop, that you know, I get to see how much money that place makes, Bob. And to think of that, the money, and every year it goes up a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. It's not the cheapest store on earth. And we aren't in the richest, you know, group ever, but that's where you can go and buy your local produce, your local meat, your local this, your local that, your vitamins or whatever else, local soap, anything that they make here and they sell here. You're going to spend a little bit more money, but all that money stays in your community. And what happens is every year it keeps going up and up and up and up and up and up and up. And, you know, I don't know. I see, you know, the people that work there kind of own it. The people that shop there own it.
Well, that's why it's a cooperative, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And we care about what happens to it. So, I mean, if I worked at a company, you know, why would I want to sit there, work at a company for 30 years, then turn around when are they going to let me retire now, 80? When I hit 80 years old and I get to retire and I get my Social Security, but Wall Street, you know, gambled my pension away. So I don't even have a 401k. I have nothing anymore. Well, what did I just give? Nothing. What did I gain? Nothing. You know, like you sit there, the same thing with the unions, and, you know, it's only half-assery. That's half-assery. We need to really start doing it. We need to do like what they did in Argentina. Remember that when they were going to shut the plants down there? And those guys said, no, you ain't shutting them down. We're going to still do it, and we'll just take it over. If you don't want to run it, we'll do it. And they did. And they sat there, and they ran it, and they turned it over, and they got profit, and then they had riots and everything else. But, you know, that's what we need to start doing. We got how many empty factories? I drove through Illinois. I drove through Michigan. You've driven through those states. How many empty factories?
It gets a little depressing.
It's like a freaking zombie wasteland battleground. That's what that is. That's what it's going to be like, Running Man in the future. You know, a big city with nobody in it. You get to run around, run away from Fireball and Buzzsaw. I mean, that's what it's going to be? That's not, that's bullcrap. What the hell is that? That's not the future we need to go down, everyone. Everyone knows this. You know, you hear it more and more, too, Bob, with the trains, right? The train is still not dead. The high-speed rail through Wisconsin is still not dead. These people here aren't going to put up with it. Where do we want to put it? In between the highways. Let's go. Now, now, now. Get jobs out there. Isn't that making jobs? I don't understand. I mean, you know, I hate to think, you know, that somebody has to get a PhD, as a female has to get a PhD to make what a man makes in construction. Like I told you what my brother makes. He makes more than he should. Reality, because he's getting rewarded for being a schlep. You know, I'm not saying he doesn't have to work, and he does have to work, and it's backbreaking work, but come on now.
Well, no, I mean, look, my good friend B-Rez, who does some of the did some of the announces for, like, the openings and so forth on the program, was telling me the other day, and, oh, God, I laughed. He said, now, you're going to take a guy who dropped out of high school at 16, and, well, they're going to give me $50,000 a year to blow up a mountain. And much as with you, Albert, he looks at me and goes, and you look at him and go, they're going to pay you that much to do that, and you having the skills you've got, and that doesn't turn a little light on for you going, maybe I'm doing something evil here? You know, Jesus, it turns into a matter of Glenn Frey's Smuggler's Blues. You know, you be cool for 20 hours and I'll give you 20 grand.
That's right. Yikes. It's like the military runs that racket, though, too, don't they?
Well, they kind of do.
You know. Yeah, you know, so that's how they roll. That's
but I got to tell you, we got to be careful about, as you said it a few minutes ago, I was thinking, ooh, this is one we don't want to whisper into the ear of the universe, or more particularly into the ear of corporate America. Can't you see the pink slips now? I mean, just no, not now, but look into the future. Can't you see the pink slips? Congratulations! Amalgamated Widget of America is pleased to give you your freedom. You are no longer a slave to this corporation. You're free! Because America's all about freedom, and you've just got more of it. It all kind of makes sense, though. You know, you run back to me and Bobby McGee. Freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose.
Yeah, no doubt. And what's going on over in England? What's that? What is all this? What happened? What's going on over there?
Well, I mean,
what's going on? What is that?
Ah, that's conservatism at work.
Okay.
That's the free market. But see, the people with all the money don't like it when they get the free market handed back to them. Well, what do you say we smash some shop windows and take some big screen TVs and a computer here and there and maybe a tablet computer or some cell phones and let the insurance companies take care of it. Well, by God, that's the free market, isn't it, Albert? But suddenly they don't like the free market. I mean, they didn't have enough police to bring in. And suddenly David Cameron has trebled the size of the police force available in London.
Hmm.
You know, they're calling in reinforcements. And meanwhile, if you read some of the blogs and you see some of the hateful people over there, I hope they bring in the army and shoot these people down in the streets like the dogs they are.
Yep, I've heard that.
I mentioned that one blog post, her name is Penny Red. And because I was just, well, one, it was extremely good writing, the blog post itself. But I'm one of these people who actually goes and reads the comments, Albert.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too.
And most of the people were being really reasonable, and they were, you know, talking about causation, and they were talking about, the wages of a conservative government trying to take every last blessed thing away from the people who have the least to take anything away from.
Mm-hmm.
And in the middle of it all, some guy says, well, I was raised as poor as they were, and I got searched one time, and I didn't deserve it, but I work hard, and my taxes go to pay for these dueless louts who won't get off their arses. And you just want to reach out through the tubes, Albert, and grab dude, and give him a little shake and say, no,
look where your taxes are going. Your taxes are not supporting these people. That is why these people are burning down buildings. Your taxes are going to support people who have hummingbird tongue lady finger sandwiches with watercress every day at lunch.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
But it's always, I pulled myself up by my own bootstraps.
Sure you did. Sure you did. See, that's when white people don't understand how easy they got it. Yeah, you know, and you know, and I'm white. I understand. I see it. It's clear as day. And you may not want to admit it, but it's true. It just is. It's just how it is. And you know, it's like they're funny. They always whining and crying about people on welfare here in this country, and most of those people are white. But they always think they're black. They always act like they're black. They're Cadillac welfare queens, right? Who drives Cadillac welfare? Who? With mother with eight kids, right? No dad, right? You know the image in your head who that is.
Sure,
I do. It's clear as day. It's Juanita with her braids in her hair, and you know that's what it is. And they go, "Oh, I should have paid for that." lazy. But it's mostly white people on welfare. You know, you sit there, you talk about it. It's like you pay your taxes. Yeah, true, and everyone's covered. But when your taxes go to wars that they borrow money for, yeah, I don't know if England happened to borrow money for their war. I mean, our war, I should say, because we're in it together, right?
Right.
I mean, you know, I don't think that they, you know, they probably didn't do anything that. Well, you never know. I was going to say they didn't do anything that stupid, but.
But no, you look at what's going on in England, and I'm sorry, I have this overarching urge to yell, "Hey, rich people! Do you like seeing your shit burn? Pay your effing taxes."
Yeah. Like Matt Damon said. Have some pride. You know, like, make the country better with your money. You know, like, don't sit there and hold on to it. And, you know, because you got enough. You know, Bill Gates, right? Bill Gates, oh, he's got so much money, he can't get rid of it. You can't get rid of it once you get $1 billion. I don't want to hear, I sat there, I was listening to some stupid ass on the Huffington Post with his comments. Something about his sister in the top 2% has to pay, you know, and of course they always exaggerate because they're in fantasy land, this fantasy lie land, where they actually think that they have a sister who's in the top 2%. You know, but they'll sit there and like, oh, tax at 55%. What? How is she taxed at 55%? Would she win the lotto? Then I could see tax at 55%. Because the top tax rate, and I did actually, I went and did the math on that kind of money. At $50 million, tax rate is only 34.97%. And if you make $50 million, then you'd have to pay $17 million in taxes. So I don't know how you would even, how could you survive on $35 million? I don't even understand how you, I mean, it's impossible.
No, see, no, I'm goofy like that, Albert, because, and it was Boss Man Wayne who first put it this way. He said, if a man pays $500,000 in taxes, that means he had a whole lot more than $500,000.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I always wanted to get to the point where I could say, hey, I pay $500,000 in taxes. Look how much I've got all left over.
Exactly.
Because you know what? You pay the rich in this country pay $500,000 in taxes. They're not exactly going on relief because of what they don't have after.
But why do they always have their hand out? They're the ones that get bailed out. They're the ones with the tax breaks. You know, like, you know, they talk about, oh, it's only so many percent, but so many percent to, you know, 2% to them compared to 2% for you. You know, 2% for you and me is 54 cents. 2% for them is $54 million. You know what I'm saying? Who needs that? I need the 54 cents more than they need the $53 million. That's just without say. You know, when I'm sitting here and I'm like, I gotta cook, you know, I mean, you know, and the meat of the week is canned chicken. I'm not saying that's what's going on, but
no, but I get it. I mean, it's like what you said about going to the co-op. You know, you pay a little extra so that corporate poison isn't on your food.
Amen.
You're paying not. Yeah. It's a don't poison me tax.
Yeah, please. Yeah, no, thank you. And that's another thing. It's a vote.
You know, and it's stuff. I'm not trying to get morose or anything. It's stuff that you may never know if you collect on. But you know what? If those two precious daughters of yours and Renee's grow to a healthy old age and you are both long gone,
mm-hmm.
and they have never been tormented by hearing some doctor say that there's some god-awful cancer growing in their bodies.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Whatever it was that you didn't buy because you bought food that didn't have poison on it,
mm-hmm.
It was well worth it, wasn't it?
Yes, sir. I mean, that's the thing. You know, they talk about spending. We need more spending. And these spending, you know, it's almost the wrong phrase. We need investment. It's not a spending. It's investment. It's like, you know, like, all right, granted, the milk, it's organic, some kind of cream top, it's not cheap. I don't even want to say how much it costs. I really don't. I mean, it's kind of shameful. But that's what I'll do. I'll put that in. I'll put that into my kids. They never, ever have drank a couple, maybe, oh, I can just count on one hand how many times they've had, you know, some milk that I didn't realize the source of it. And usually it's when they're at grandma's. Anyway,
well, when you're at grandma's, the source is Jesus. Sorry.
Jesus.
That was uncalled for. I apologize.
That's under the belt. But no, seriously, I mean, it's an investment. It's an investment for my kids' health. I mean, and I'll tell you, I don't even have to wait till I'm dust. I see it now, Bob. You see how tall my children are, 7 years old. They were 3 pounds, 10 ounces when they were born. They were tiny, tiny, teeny, teeny little babies. That's just giving them good food to me. That's what I think. It's just giving the food, letting the genetics have their room to run, and boom, there you go. You know, they popped out. Boop, boop, boop. You know, so, and that, you know, I don't know. If I'm giving them hormone-laced stuff, would that get the same effect? I don't know. I don't think so. That's not. I look around. I don't see that. I look around and I see other kids that are there.
No. It's inescapable. I mean, I met your family. You met mine. Well, we're about to be one fewer gallbladder in the family.
Yikes.
And you know what? I talked to a local medical practitioner. He says, oh, yeah, all the kids are having to have their gallbladders out. Not all of them, but no, it's not uncommon. Whereas in the rest of the world, the civilized world, it is uncommon. It is supposed to be uncommon.
Yeah, I don't even understand. How does that happen?
But, you know, I mean, just to give you a little, well, you know, heavy metals, toxins.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Give you a little sample of, you know, just the stuff around here. The news came out back on the 1st of August that Massey Energy, now owned by Alpha Natural Resources, had reached a settlement in a massive lawsuit that was filed against them by people from down in Mingo County who had their wells poisoned. You know, and every time I hear well poisoned, for some reason I get that there's something inside my DNA that starts thinking in a sort of, I don't know, Middle Eastern mindset or, you know, desert people mindset. If you poison a well, you are dragged from the tribe and staked out in the desert. By which one's water may be returned to the desert, you know.
Spread his water over the desert sands.
Yeah, so it turns out now that Massey Energy is going to pay $35 million to settle a lawsuit with hundreds of people in southern West Virginia for having poisoned their drinking water with toxic coal waste.
That's probably a small fraction of the tax breaks they've gotten over the years.
It ain't nothing. It's not anything.
Yeah.
And they'll pay $5 million for medical monitoring for all the families so that when they can, you know, so that when the doctor looks at him and says, well, you know, there's a tumor the size of a cantaloupe growing in you. And it's already compensated. Well, we paid $35 million for that cantaloupe-sized tumor, by God. Because America needs some coal. And more than that, we need some profit. Now this news came out today. The value of the settlement. Go and see how much Alpha Natural Resources dropped. Hint, not appreciably, if at all. Oh, well, we've got that monkey off our back. Time to buy, buy, buy.
They change their name every 10 years.
Yeah.
That's what it is. I don't even know who's this Alpha. I hate Massey. Oh, who's Alpha? Oh, Alpha. Oh, Alpha sounds nice. And then we can start to grow to hate them too, right?
Right. And so, and see that, you know, the fun thing is these people's wells are still poisoned.
Of course.
And they will be poisoned for the next million years.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
So they're going to have water piped into them, which is still water that's coming from West Virginia.
Or Texas.
That's that dry water. Extra dry. Dust on the olive dry. But they're going to have a water bill. So you take those, if you think, okay, so $33 million would be $11 million to the lawyers.
Yeah, don't forget them guys.
Well, no, I got no fault with them for it. Because, you know, it costs a hell of a lot of money to stand up to thugs like Alpha Natural Resources and Massey Energy.
True indeed.
So that means we're down to $22 million by several hundred. And their wells are still poisoned, and the poison is still in their bodies, and they are, statistically and with all the odds, they will still sit there and see that somber-faced doctor walk into the room. By God, that tumor's the size of a canned ham.
Unbelievable. Can't afford to get it taken out, though. Can't afford to do any medical follow-up. Can't afford any of that stuff.
No, we're only paying. Massey's only paying for the monitoring, not the fixing.
Yeah, why should they do that? I mean, that's what is that? $40 million, and you know, so then $11 million or ten, or say even $30 million. $30 million for how many people? 4,000.
Hundreds. It said hundreds.
Hundreds.
So,
of thousands?
Yeah, divided by 1,000.
Oh, by 1,000.
Yeah. But here's a fun thing. I read another little article today. You're just going to love this, Albert. This is a real hoot.
Mm-hmm.
Buried deep in a story about my senator, Blanche Manchin,
mm-hmm.
and about how he went to visit a school that has school year-round.
Mm-hmm.
That's the future, says Senator Blanche Manchin. Yeah, but well, the kids are going to school year round, you know, because Japan has 230 school days a year, and Western European countries have 215 days a year, and we're only sending our kids to school for 180 days. Well, we got it. Oh God, it just makes me crazy. So buried down in this story about him visiting this school way, way the hell down, is mention of the fact that Joe Manchin. Not the brightest bulb in the Senate, has taken the trouble to actually sit down with his crayon and write a letter to Senator Harry Reid asking that he be put on the Super Congress. Oh, I mean, my eyes bugged out. I started, because you know what that means. You know what that means.
Uh-huh.
That means the coal industry wants on the Super Congress.
Uh-huh. No, sir.
Because they've already got the Republican side because Mitch McConnell is appointing the senators, so coal's got nothing to worry about there.
See? You called it how long ago with that guy?
Oh.
He's not a Democrat. Come on now. The guy looks like Rick Perry. He's like a Rick Perry.
His hair may be better than Rick's.
You think?
Oh, it's very bad. Yeah, I mean, Joe's got some helmet hair going on.
Oh, man.
I mean, people in World War One gas masks have to, get the lacquer, you know. And, as David in Tennessee just noted, Manchin's working on a tax break for coal companies that have court judgments against them in excess of 35 cents. You know, just to bring some balance. That's one of Joe's famous favorite words, balance. Just to bring some balance to the process. Just to level the playing field.
Now I know why gallbladder issues over in West Virginia.
There.
Me have a gall. I'm just hearing it. My gallbladder's starting to ache. Oh, he's a filth. You guys get rid of that guy. Come on now.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like out in Nebraska. You know, Nebraska's got Ben Nelson, and that man's a Republican. I mean, he really is. He's a Republican with a weasel on his head.
Yes, sir.
And so the guy who's running against him is out there currying favor by referring to poor people as coons.
Coons, yes, sir. Coons, raccoons, stealing precious endangered beetles.
And you notice the slur of the EPA that came along in that little sound. But some biologist, you know, one of them smart learning book people. Worried about that there burry beetle.
Oh, Bob. Yeah, you caught it. Yeah, you saw it. God, it's just filth. It's just disgusting.
I like money.
I like money.
You like money? I like money. That's cool. Jesus, Albert. It's too early to drink.
I don't know. I'm getting out of here. As soon as I'm out of here, I'm starting. Because I don't know. I'm going to have to look at it. I don't know. I don't know how this election's going to go. I hope it goes well. I mean, the only thing, my only worry is that sometimes people get voter fatigue. But maybe in a way, you know, like any kind of habit. You know, because we've been voting over here a lot. You know, I mean, I voted twice already this year and third time today. So it's kind of, you know, a lot of voting. I just hope people are paying attention and have gotten out there and the right people went and voted today. And because I'll tell you, if Wisconsin has a strong showing, that could really change the whole tone, I think, nationally. I think that might change a lot of things. It might give a lot of other states, you know, might give these people looking out for some sort of, you know, spark in the night. It might give it that. And that's kind of what I hope we are, because, man, we need some change in this country. Goodness gracious.
Yeah, the real stuff, not the campaign slogan stuff.
Yeah, no, I don't know what, you know, President Not. I mean, I think we coined him on, what is it? That was when he won. We called him Not Sure, President Not Sure. And, you know, I really do hope he's done with this crap. I hope what if we go out there and we do vote for him, we say, all right, people, let's go. You know, because there's no one else. What else are we going to do? We're going to get, what's his name? Manchin and Rick Perry in there? Or Bachman and Rick Perry? Can you imagine that, those two?
Or, you know, how about a Perry-Romney ticket?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Back to the bottle. But see, there's one thing I kind of want to clear up here. I get these emails, and I understand them because I get furious too, Albert. But I get these emails from people saying, you know what? There's no difference between Barack Obama and a Republican.
Come on now.
And well, there is. There's a lot about Barack Obama that feels an awful lot like one of the old school liberal Republicans. You know, the Rockefeller Republicans.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, the New York. Yeah, really good on social issues. And, you know, straight Wall Street party line voter.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that. But the one thing that people need to take into consideration is that there is stuff that we, because we as liberals, progressives, whatever we care to call ourselves, Albert, there's stuff that we really, really haven't had to pour heart and soul into over the last 3 years. For those who have forgotten the 8 years of the Bush administration, every inch had to be contested from the right-wingers out there assaulting a woman's right to choose. Okay? Every inch. And we had federal monies going to PR agencies to promote snowflake baby embryo adoption.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we haven't had to fight that fight for the last 3 years.
Yeah, that's been nice. It has, because that was just,
you know, we've actually made some progress in the EPA with regard to things like mountaintop removal.
Mm-hmm.
Barack Obama's response to the BP disaster was not the best in the world. He didn't have anybody taken to the wall and shot. But, you know, and all the surrendering and all the caving, I understand the frustration with all of that. But there are battles, Albert, that we have not had to fight. That we will have to fight with Governor Goodhair, with President Goodhair, or President Willard, or President the Bachman. You know, here's a question: If Michelle Bachman becomes president, will we still refer to Marcus as the First Lady?
Yeah.
Just.
Oh my God. Can you just see?
Oh,
it?
I'm gonna get letters.
I can see it now. You know it.
And here comes First Lady Marcus Bachman in a stunning frock.
Oh, he'll be fabulous, wouldn't he?
I'm ashamed of myself. I'm going to get email. And I mean, I don't mean that hatefully. I mean that as in, you know, going after the hypocrite that that freak obviously is. But there are fights we have not had to fight, Albert, that we will have to go back to fighting. It's been kind of a relief to actually, if not have people completely in our corner in the EPA, have them not being overtly hostile to us. Okay? It's nice when people in the Food and Drug Administration aren't actively looking for ways to poison you, but are just sort of ambivalent. And in some ways, ambivalent is a good thing.
Exactly.
When it's compared to, you know, shrieking, hair-on-fire hostility.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess some of this is kabuki, but I don't know if you saw this story. It was kind of close to showtime, but it was one of those moments. And with regard to the rioting in London,
mm-hmm.
I offer you the words of Stanley Kurtz from the National Review, Albert.
Okay.
Strap in.
The London riots have already kicked off the latest version of the seemingly never-ending debate over whether such events should be seen primarily as political protests by the powerless or as out-and-out lawbreaking and vandalism. Back in 1992, Obama clearly leaned toward the former. I found the press release Obama issued to get Project Vote rolling in the Acorn Archives at the Wisconsin Historical Society. Said Obama in 1992, the Los Angeles riots reflect a deep distrust and disaffection with the existing power pattern in our society. That's Alinsky speak for we've got to use the power of the angry underclass to put capitalism in check. I certainly don't think President Obama would openly speak about events in London the way he spoke about the L.A. riots 19 years ago. What he thinks to himself is another matter. Yeah, because, you know, Barack Obama and Michelle are just sitting there in the White House bedroom watching the BBC U.S. World the version going, yeah, burn, baby, burn. Oh, I wish I was there. I'd throw a Molotov cocktail myself.
Yeah.
Power to the people.
Yeah. It's amazing. They don't like raccoons, right? But they want them to breed. They sure want that, don't they?
Well, yeah, it's, you know, it's just the kind of, it's the kind of contradiction that that would cause an intelligent person's head to explode.
Exactly. They're,
you'd just be walking around with those hateful Star Trek noises in your head from that little thing in that chair. You know, the one that was supposed to heal the psychopaths on that one planet, just screaming.
Yeah, it's like the R word. You can't say the R word anymore, I understand, people with disabilities and so on. But I wish the people with disabilities would just let us have it. It's such a good word. I've said it a billion times. I've never once has anyone with any mental disability popped into my mind when I say the word, because it doesn't mean that. You know, it's like the Louis C.K., I guess, approach to it. That's how it is.
Yeah.
Limited vocabulary and all, but that's what it is. It's just like, are you kidding me? Who do you think you're kidding? Like, who are you talking to? What's wrong with you? You think we're that stupid? This Saul Alinsky talk. What a filthy, disgusting. Oh, my. Oh, Bob, what are you doing to me? My gallbladder.
Somebody. Yeah, I know. You're good. Know. Yeah, your liver's quivering, too, Albert.
Oh, God.
I got to share it with somebody.
Because
otherwise, I just sit here and bang my head against the monitor, and pretty soon Agnes comes in and makes me leave the room, and it's just, you know, it's embarrassing.
Poor Agnes. Yeah, I don't understand. You know, like, there has to be, we got to make the investment. We have to make the investment, period. You know, I don't understand where they're going to sit there and they're trying to fight these battles that they've lost. And you talk about the majority of the people in terms of what they want, and I hope Wisconsin, I'm telling you, I just, ugh. Nervous, Bob, but I hope it does. I hope people came up. If people came out, we win. If they stay home and they forget, well, we'll keep being spinning our wheels over here. Because that's really what it is, isn't it? Well, what do they want? Where's their plan? What's going to fix it? More tax cuts? I don't understand. What the hell? What framework are you coming on?
They're not going to be happy till they're paying no taxes at all, Albert. I mean, it is.
But then what happens when your water isn't there? What happens? happens when you don't have water?
And it's 107 degrees in the shade.
And it's 107 degrees. What happens when there's no water?
Well, by God, in the Republican world, you tell that pissed off old lady to go out and haul her water up by her own bootstraps.
It's water, people. Water. We pay for water. It's the common good. Isn't it? Doesn't that make sense? I don't know, bud. It makes sense to you and me. I think you and I and everyone in the Horn family, we're well aware of what needs to be done, where we've been, where we need to go. And I think we're going to get there. I really do. I can't see...
Well, it's like Reverbo says, you know, let's start the bus and tell them we've idled long enough and we're going to close the door and go without them.
It's time to go. Yeah, exactly. It's time to start moving on. Enough of this. They don't want to go? Fine. Fine. We'll take pictures and video and we'll send them to you and you'll see what you missed.
Greetings from lovely civilization. But yeah.
To boldly go.
Albert, have a wonderful evening, brother.
You too, brother.
All right.
You
see you. Bye now. Albert, the sage of Southwest Wisconsin. Michael, one of our Michaels, posted a map he had created on my Facebook page the other day of what a broken up United States might look like. And, you know, it's the old Confederacy. And he also imagined the state of Jefferson, which would be Northern California, Oregon, and Washington. And one thing occurred to me as I looked at the South. If they got their way, because remember, they're all the right wingers are all hot and bothered about having themselves a secessionist for the president. The South couldn't feed itself, especially with climate change going the way it is. The South could not feed itself. It would have to make war on the remaining states of the Union in order to try to capture territory enough to feed itself. In large part, of course, before the Civil War, the South could not feed itself because all of its lands were in cotton. All the plantation owners ate well, but they ate well on credit derived from those cotton sales. Those soldiers in Butternut who went into the Civil War went in hungry, and they either came out dead or hungrier. You know, David in South Carolina noted that they're getting a new Congress critter because of population shifts. Blue states, northern states continue to lose population, southern states continue to gain it. But the only way that the South can continue to gain population is by virtue of the vast, vast investment in infrastructure that the United States federal government made in lifting the South up out of its own self-imposed misery. Including things like the TVA and the Rural Electrification Act. Electricity had come well into the 20th century, and yet the for-profit free market electric companies didn't want to go into places like the rural South because it was not worth it to the free market. It was costly to the free market. It bit into the free market's profits. Only with the vast infrastructure social welfare projects initiated by the federal government did places like Atlanta blossom. Only with the subsidies for electrification of the rural South did the little suburbs spring up. Only, as David in Tennessee notes, with the interstate highway system did the South become accessible to the rest of the nation and even within itself. But the South hates government spending. The South hates government spending that keeps little old ladies from having to scream in 107-degree heat about not having water! But the South hates government spending. God Almighty. Which reminds me, going back to the matters in England. David Tennessee wrote me earlier today, offering some observations there. He said, "My knowledge of that culture is spotty and dated. But I do know this. During four visits there in the 1990s, it wasn't the Troubles that occupied the kids I was around. It was two things. Getting Maggie out and keeping Maggie's designate out. The Troubles were an outside irritation inflicted upon the reasonable grunts of London by a long-standing and complicated system of tits for tats. Maggie and all her ilk were a self-inflicted wound to be stopped, treated, and prevented from ever happening again. Irish efforts to bedevil London were the stuff they had to, had their stiff upper lip to deal with. Brixton, oh, Brixton, that was a very different matter. Brixton spawned movements. It caused bands to form that matter to this day. Hence, last night I played The Clash's The Guns of Brixton. Kids that found the Irish problem a bit of a nuisance were talking day and night then about the riots in Brixton. And now Brixton has flickered. Birmingham has flared. Fucking Liverpool has done flames. This is not kids looking for a rush. This is a cultural segment striking back. I got loaded on 1 pound 20 pint of cider with the uncles and aunts of the kids that are on fire in England right now. Those people don't do drive-bys like here, but get them mad enough, they can be quite the adversary. Don't let anybody tell you a working-class English kid can't give you all you want. No, 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 no. And the response? The response will be massive jail sentences. Probably a number of persons of color will lose their lives in some English prison, as they have been wont to do over the last couple of decades. Measured in the hundreds, unexplained prison deaths in the UK. And it's worth remembering that if a very rich man pays a little more in taxes, as Lewis Black has noted, what do you have left? A very rich man. Contrarywise, if a very rich man pays a whole lot less in taxes, what do you have left? A very poor nation. And that's where we are. Those are the choices that we face. And yet there are still those who say that Barack Obama did not give enough away of the store in this latest surrender. That we didn't abase ourselves to the rich enough. That true happiness and prosperity will only come when we have absolutely destroyed the government that created the prosperity that enables people in a particular region of this country to scream about the federal government that saved their asses. when you consider it in that light, isn't it just a little bit breathtaking? Yeah, me too. It's an expression of something that I can't even fully comprehend. I mean, really. You have people from largely from a particular segment of our country who want to tear our country apart, were enabled to make those cries by a level of representation increased in the Congress by virtue of population shifts that were subsidized by the federal government. Well, here's what it boils down to. They really are still fighting the Civil War. And they mean to win. And it does not matter who they hurt, over whom they roll in achieving their victory. So, just bear that in mind. I saw this, and it was earlier today. The video is great, but the audio is equally stunning. December 1773. Tea Party Patriots wasted perfectly good tea to send a message. July 2011. Tea Party Patriots wasted an anemic financial recovery to send a message.
You wouldn't call this felching, would you? Or this a dirty Sanchez? Or this Santorum? Well, forget that one. Then why would you call these patriots teabaggers? Sure, many of them have testicles, but the only forehead they want to slap them on is that of Uncle Sam. And you elitists should thank them for it. Right now. Tea Party. America thanks you for pushing our government to the edge of economic collapse, showing the world that compromise is just dirty Euro slang for surrender. Thank you, Tea Party, for reducing complex national economics down to a simple metaphor of Joe the plumber telling Capital One he won't pay his credit card charges for that strip club until his wife stops feeding his freeloading grandmother all the time. Thank you, Tea Party, for defending the job creators so they're free to slash jobs, maximize profits, and widen the income gap without tax burdens, ensuring that middle-class crybabies won't be sullying their ranks anytime soon. Oh, and your 2%-bound Tea Party exemption card is in the mail. Thank you, Tea Party, for helping Mitch McConnell stay true to his highest stated purpose, undermining the President of the United States. That's what true patriots do, along with wearing cool hats and comic book sideburns. Because of you, dear unsweetened Tea Party, we can teach Wall Street a lesson by wiping out the 4,000 points gained since the Comecanium was installed by the Islamo-Socialist Illuminati. Because of you, steep patriots, we can shrink government down to the size of your worldview. We can eliminate the Department of Education, freeing Tennessee to ignore monkey science and letting Kansas take a break from trying so hard. We can eliminate the Environmental Protection Agency, freeing corporations to use common sense and compassion when polluting our drinking water. We can eliminate the Securities and Exchange Commission, freeing the American ingenuity of megabanks. It worked before, mostly. It can work again. we can eliminate Social Security, freeing the elderly to pass on their life experiences to the homeless population. And we can eliminate FEMA. After all, natural disasters only happen to places God hates. Avoid a hurricane. Ask your gay population to move to another state. As we enter the second dip of our Great Recession, America thanks you, the Tea Party, for having the passion and interpersonal skills of a 13-year-old Dungeons & Dragons fanatic, for slapping your star-spangled balls upside the head of Uncle Sam, and for reminding America to never doubt that a small group of reactionary, xenophobic, corporately manipulated citizens can change the world. The Tea Party. Teabagging America. Because no one is stopping them.
That, of course, from DCDouglas.com. Voiceover artist extraordinaire, DCDouglas.com. DCDouglas.com. Someday, I hope my voice gets deep enough that I can be DC Douglas. God, that was good. So we will we'll take a little break and come back to your phone calls and your thoughts. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You are, in fact, listening to the horn.
Traveled all around the world, and there are places that still stand out to me. None can really quite compare to my island in the sea. My personal utopia, a place to run to, where I can hide away, where I can truly rest, somewhere fresh and clean, where a man can dream. you come my way, I'll give you all my love. Not a complicated thing, someplace I can swing, where a man can be a king. I'm king, king of somewhere hot. I'm king, like every man should be. I'm king, king of somewhere hot. I don't care how hard you look.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do?
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Total Genius, it's not your mother's soap.
Hey dude, wait 1 second, it's totally my mother's soap.
Bubble Genius, it's not your father's soap.
No, see, right here I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, stuff for my dog.
Holy crap, there's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Bubble Genius, we got your soap right here.
And got your bath and body stuff.
www.doublegenius.com.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
There's B-Rez. Man, another one of those voices. One of the he's also one of the better club jocks. I don't mean golfers. I mean he's a DJ in the southern West Virginia area. Pretty awesome. 10 minutes past the hour, and we move onward. You heard the Bubble Genius ad there. Just a little reminder. I don't mention this enough, but remember, you can take the horn to the shower or the bath with you. With any order from Bubble Genius, bubblegenius.com. Insert the promo code HORNIE, H-O-R-N-I-E, and you will receive a free bar of Horn soap. Smells lovely, looks lovelier with the Horn logo embedded in it. And you'll be buying safe, non-corporate, vegan-friendly soap to scrub your hide with. BubbleGenius.com. It was a year ago that I saw Paula. We met them out in Las Vegas at Netroots Nation, one of the best things to come out of that trip. Paula, one of the two women who make up Bubble Genius, Paula was wearing a burgundy T-shirt that had the number 5 on the back, you know, like you'd wear for a softball game. The number 5 on the back, and across the top of the shoulders it says Vonnegut. And I thought, oh, that's just great. Well, if you go to my Facebook page, in order to celebrate the little win that we had over the Republic, Missouri School Board today, in which the Vonnegut Memorial Library, through the generosity of an anonymous donor, will be giving 150 copies of Slaughterhouse-Five to otherwise needy, yes, because the book has been banned, students in Republic, Missouri,
In order to celebrate that, I got myself a Vonnegut number 5 t-shirt, novelty.com. If you go to my Facebook page, you can see the link there. And shucks, let's all celebrate. But by the same token, it would be really cool, too, to finish tonight's fundraising as well. We need at least three more $10 contributions in order to have covered tonight, tonight's fundraising requirements. Head on RadioNetwork.com. The tab is Contribute. And there's a PayPal button and a snail mail address as well. So thanks to Paula at Bubble Genius for turning me on to the Vonnegut shirt. And on the front, by the way, it looks like a little asterisk. Okay, we've got a dirty word here, so run the kiddies out of the room. There's a little, it looks like an asterisk on the front of the shirt. That's actually Kurt Vonnegut's very famous self-portrait of his own asshole. What's that on your shirt, Bob? Yeah. But seriously, for your soap needs and for fun gift giving and stuff like that, because they come in a million shapes and all kinds of themes and stuff, bubblegenius.com. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, hell, hairdressers on fire. Apparently, rioters are smashing windows in three stores near Sloan Square. Now, I've been to Sloan Square. That's hella nice. Nice pizza places there, too. But, listen, looks like things are out of control, and I'm sorry to say, but 30 years of neglecting all those poor people in them fucked up areas, it's like, oh, what do you say? How do you say I have power? Well, you can just riot all night, day in and day out. That's a lot of power. So, all the fucking people who are in charge are freaking out. They don't know what to do, you know, because these poor, beat-down-ass people are losing it. I'm sorry. It's hard for me to be real surprised by this. And, yeah, you know, violence and rioting is not good, but neither is 30 years of immiseration. And young people got a lot of energy. I mean, this is so predictable.
Yeah, it is. And there's an element of why didn't anyone see it coming?
Please.
But the fact of the matter is a lot of people did see it coming if they were paying attention in those neighborhoods.
Well, this is interesting. There was this one NBC report. A young man in Tottenham was asked if riots really achieve anything. Yes, said the young man. You wouldn't be talking to me now if we didn't riot, would you? I'm telling you, what can I say about that statement, Bob? And he also said 2 months ago we marched to Scotland Yard, more than 2,000 of us, all blacks, and it was peaceful and calm, and you know what? Not a word in the press. Last night, a bit of rioting and looting, and look around you. I mean, these people, you know, and it's like, that sounds like a pretty good assessment.
Well,
it's I don't want to say, I mean, it's bad. It looks to be really outrageous. There's a reason, though. It's not just hooliganism or, you know.
No. The right wing would like to paint it that way. And the tea sippers with their pinkies out would like to paint it that way, Sandra. But it isn't. This is the kind of like David pointed out, this is the child of the riots of 20 years ago. And nothing improves. And 25 years ago, and nothing improves.
And it's just out of sight, out of mind, and they just press on with horrific tears in the social fabric, giving huge sections of the population nowhere to go. And we're talking about the young people. And young people, they have, it's a problem when you don't have anything for them to do.
Well, every day looks like the one before it. It's another day when there's no job. It's another day when there's nothing to do. It's another day when there's no hope. It's another day when there's no future. And those in one way, that's not sustainable, but it is self-perpetuating. And it winds up being a circumstance where the futility eventually becomes a sort of nihilistic outcry. And, I mean, isn't that what this is?
And it's amazing the state is only going to flood the streets with, you know, thousands upon thousands of cops, and the parliament is coming back, all the hand-wringing, And at the end of the day, you know, what's going to change? It's just going to be, you know, a bunch of hand-wringing and trying to understand why this has happened, but no effort to address the root causes, you know?
And precisely, Sandra, and part of the reason behind that is that attempting to understand the root causes is perceived by a certain segment of the population as weakness. Do you remember after September the 11th when some people said, well, you know, maybe we might want to look at what would make people so angry that they would do something like that? And the right wing replied, oh, that's right. You just want to sit down and hold their little hands and have a sensitivity session with them. Remember that? Well, that's the same thing that keeps any real understanding of why this sort of thing happens from taking hold in any sort of government dominated by what have you, right-wingers, conservatives, neoliberals, you know, because they're all part of the same clique and part of the same problem now.
Well, I mean, I heard someone make this really, and I don't know who it was, but I thought, yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. It's like the sort of rich are trying to create some sort of gated community for themselves, you know, worldwide. And the people who are outside of the gate, i.e. us, you know, this is what is the response to severe concentration of wealth. I mean, year after year after year, compounded by a global finance system that is out of whack, out of control, and is no purpose for it. I mean, I was just looking at the stock market and reading about the Fed, thinking, what is the purpose of this system? I mean, it's just outrageous, Bob. What's going on? I'm sorry. I just am like, it struck the bounds of absurdity, and it's just an outrage.
Well, you're gonna love this. I just got this story in from Michael over in Norway. And frankly, I think, you know, these riots and the stock market collapse and the debt ceiling capitulation have all sort of pushed the Norwegian Breivik story off of the front pages. But I think it is at our peril that we do not see a connection between all of these things. And now Michael sends in this story coming from London via the Associated Press. The leader of a British far-right group says its members are taking to the streets of British cities in an attempt to quell riots that have spread across the country, blah, blah, blah. Stephen Lennon, leader of the English Defense League, said that up to 1,000 members plan to turn out in Luton, where the group is based, and others that have suffered unrest, including the northwest city of Manchester. They're carrying out patrols trying to deter rioters, yada, yada. So, in other words, the right wing is going to go in and try to have them some skull-cracking good fun. That'll work out well, won't it?
Yeah. I mean, and I can't... Yeah, but that's just... I don't know. I mean, part of it is just shocking, but it's also... It looks to be a serious breakdown that's going on in England. And I take you back to... a few months ago when Cameron was like, oh, I'm going to slash the police too, and the police came out and said, oh, this might be a problem for you when the social unrest starts, right? Okay, here we are. And now all of a sudden, what? You know, do they think that society will just go along with the sort of brutal reduction in the social contract? I mean, I really got to ask this because these leaders seem oblivious to that fact. And when this kind of stuff comes up, they're like, oh, we can use rubber bullets tonight. I mean, what? Is that the response? Is that it? Is that all we're going to get?
Well, eventually, won't they move? I mean, do you really expect them to stay with the rubber bullets?
Well, I mean, no, it's just, so now we're moving into the stage in sort of, quote, liberal democracies where we won't be able to tell the difference between London and Syria pretty soon? Is that what's coming?
I'm beginning to wonder myself. I don't want to get all apocalyptic or anything, but is this how civil society breaks down on a global level?
Well, we all know that, and the extreme example is World War II in Europe. Okay, I don't know how many millions of people were destroyed and endless destruction, but once that was done, what was the first thing that these people realized? They're like, shit, we need to have some sort of welfare state or social safety net or whatever. An enlargement of the pie for everyone. I mean, that was sort of the gist of the compact. And that has completely been sold down the river now. And so what we had during World War II can easily come about again. And I know I'm sounding, you know, alarmist, but what's separating war, you know, is people having enough to survive and maintain some sort of reasonable existence, right?
Yeah, well, if I asked the question on another message board one day, you know, what happens when finite resources become so finite that there's nothing else to capitalize anymore? And the brief answer I got back from a conservative-sounding fellow was, well, then you have war. Oh, well, good, that's reassuring.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, you know, I have no idea where this is going in England. I mean, we can just assume that it will eventually calm down, or they'll arrest enough people or whatever. But, you know, I just wonder what's going to come up after that. I mean, are they going to, you know,
Well, there will be massive arrests, and the one thing that I got to thinking about, especially where London was concerned, I thought London was completely secure now because they had cameras on every light on every lamppost.
Well, that's, you know, what a good mask is for. I'm sorry, because they were
yeah.
But
just wait a minute, Sandra. So how about that? Multi-millions of pounds of high-technology optics have been defeated by the humble knitted mask.
Yeah, the thing is that, you know, if you have enough people out of control, you know, there's not enough cops in the world who can stop it. That's why I'm sure they're freaking out now in England. But it took them a while to sort of realize what was going on. I mean, I really don't know where it's gonna lead, but wow, that's all I can say about it.
Well, I mean, you know, there's it had to be more than a little bit disgusting for the people who are unhappy to realize, well, you know, we've certainly made it unpleasant for David Cameron. He's had to come back from Tuscany, and Clegg has had to come back from France, and you know, and oh well, too bad for them. I mean, isn't there a sort of Marie Antoinette quality to all of that?
Well, and also all the commentators who are making noise about anything, you know, 4 days ago could give a F about any of these communities. And I have to say, well, that certainly has gotten their attention. And so I go back to that poor man who was shot. Now it's all coming out that he didn't have no gun, he didn't have nothing.
No.
See? Nothing. He was shot. Murdered, and it's like, oh, now they're investigating. It's just like, oh boy, you know, the black people in England have seen that movie over and over and over and over again. Okay,
exactly.
It's incredible. I just looking at it thinking, are you kidding me with this? You know, ugh. Anyway, yeah, I don't, you know, I really don't know.
You know, but media coverage plays into this, Sandra. You know, the quote you just read, I'd seen that earlier as well. Well, you know, you're paying attention now, aren't you? And but there is an element of for-profit media complicity in this. You know, this comes on the heels of Rupert Murdoch feeding,
yeah,
you know, feeding a people nothing but a steady diet of pictures of the royals behaving badly. I can't help juxtaposing this, and you know, I caught a little bit of grief back during the royal wedding for my over the top vitriol against those pampered princes and princesses. Well, and you know, NBC was there, and ABC and CBS and CNN, all the for-profit media were there to watch this magnificent spectacle, this orgy of consumption, and not one report filed from the other London, if you will, Sandra. And that plays into, you know, like I said, the quote that you just read. There is an element of complicity here because the what we call this, you know, the so-called Fourth Estate refuses to do its job and report on the reality. The realities of cities like London and its underclass I don't know, a little bit of reporting, a little bit of attention, a few questions being asked might have quelled some of this. But there are, you know, there are a dozen what-ifs and wherefores to this. You know, what if the cops had just come out and talked to Mr. Duggan's family?
Well, that's the thing. It's just like, you know, these sort of simple, a bit of humanity shown to these communities go a long damn way. And it's just, that's why I just feel so, you know, cold to the process that's going on now. It's like, yeah, and? I don't know. It's just sort of like, you know, you people who are in charge go after year after year after year exploiting and ignoring these communities, I guess, to your peril. Because, you know, in Philadelphia, it's out of control with the flash mobs. That, yeah, I don't know if you've missed that, but that's continuing and going on there, and Chicago, and Cleveland.
And in what regard, please? I saw some mention of it, but I don't know the particulars,
pardon?
Sandra.
Pardon?
In what regard? I've seen mention, but I haven't seen particulars. What's going on?
Oh, no, it's just that there's been of youth sort of, you know, mugging and attacking people in Philadelphia. It seems to be on the rise. And I saw a couple of stories of the same thing going on in Chicago. And, you know, it's all being, oh, it's just sort of either they're blaming it on gang-related or, you know, bad youth. But I just think it's, if you look at the unemployment and the lack of concern for those communities because of the slashing and burning of the services, it all ties in. I can't go with the horrible predatory youth narrative anymore. It ain't washing.
Well, it's, you know, too simple. It's too easy.
And I think that this is, you know, where else are we going to go except for that direction by virtue of the reduction in services? I hate to keep saying it over and over again, but I really think because people are so divorced from the real role of government, they don't know. And so when it's gone, and they will know, one way or the other.
But I mean, how many times does this have to happen? The riots in France of a couple of years ago, and of course that was described as, well, you know, that's mostly Muslim youth.
Mm.
Well, how about, let's find another adjective. How about disaffected? How about downtrodden? How about ripped off? How about futureless? Because it's not. You know, nobody says, "Oh, it's just a bunch of Muslims out." No, that's not what London is, but it's the same characteristic. It is a government trying to take away the last little bits of hope to which the most fragile people in the society have to cling.
And also, I'm really sort of sick of this word. This word looting is getting really funny to me because it's like, oh, hold on, don't we have banks and the upper echelons of our society just looting nonstop? Isn't that what the whole capital markets is all about, is looting?
Well, see, looting has never had the same meaning to me, Sandra, since, and we're coming up on the anniversary, since Katrina. Because every time I hear the word loot, I see those two pictures side by side in my little mind now. You know, here are black people who are looting, and here are white people who are scavenging for food.
Well, I mean, as long as it's Goldman Sachs driving municipalities into bankruptcy and destruction, it's okay. But as soon as it's some mass kid breaking locker or one of those shoe stores and running out with a bunch of shoes, it's something different. But I will say that I don't see no damn difference.
No, the only difference is the costuming.
Yeah.
Bespoke Savile Row suits. You know, but then again, it's the old adage about steal a dollar and they call you a thief, steal a thousand and they call you a businessman.
Well, and also that's always been the paradigm. But what I'm saying now is because it's so blatantly exercised in front of our faces all the time, every day, all the time. So it's hard for me to get all sort of, you know, indignant about that when this grand robbery of every treasury on earth has not been addressed, and it continues unabated, and we're supposed to get exercised about these poor people running roughshod over one high street or another. So, but see, that's why I'm not in charge.
Yeah. Well, no. But that's the thing. If someone who was paying attention had been in charge, this might not have happened. Either in the present or over the course of the last 25 to 30 years. But instead, I mean, these are, it's hard not to look at this as a socially self-inflicted wound.
And also just the total contempt and lack of concern or caring of what's going on with various and certain segments of society. You know, that really plays into it. No empathy, no concern, just cut them loose, you know. But that mentality has a bite. It'll come back on you. Because anyway, I told you, people will not just starve and disappear. I'm telling you, it ain't going to happen.
No, they won't go down without taking a couple of swings. I just got this note in from Darlene, Sandra, this is one to sort of cross your eyes. The tea sippers seem more worried about what the riots are going to mean in terms of the 2012 Olympic Games in London. And I had completely forgotten about those. But there've been entire areas, you know, the Olympics always turn out to be a plague to whatever city gets them. Because, you know, people have to be displaced. Well, guess what?
Right.
The people who measure their fortunes in millions of pounds aren't getting displaced to build the Olympic Village or the basketball arena or what have you. It's people like the folks that are in the streets in London now. They're the ones who are paying this price. And the idea, as Darlene notes it, the idea that this won't bode well for the games in 2012, now will it?
Well, of course, and that's why I started out with that little comment that I found in the New York Times about, oh, my goodness, Sloan Square. You know, the sort of shock and horror, because I guess people who read the New York Times can relate to a Sloan Square. And I'm like, you know, give me a goddamn break. But, when it, you know, it's like I said, it's seeping over into that part of town. You know, it's a problem.
Well, and that, again, that goes back to what you said last night, you know, hey, Westminster that way.
Yeah, and it's just, I haven't really given it too much thought, really what it all means, but, you know, I just...
By the same token, I assert, Sandra, that if they should start moving in that direction or moving toward the Tony neighborhoods, the rubber bullets will go away and the full metal jacketed ones will come out.
Oh, yeah, no, that's always the same story. You're too right about that. Anyway, listen, so I hope you enjoyed that carrot top.
Oh, my God. I guess I hadn't seen him in a while.
I don't ever want to see him again, but I was like, oh.
Really? I mean, Carrot Top is on the juice?
I don't know. Listen, I really didn't know what to say about that, but I thought, Mom, must
and the And the reference to the eyebrows?
Yeah, that was...
It always starts with the eyebrows?
Yeah, no, that was...
For those of you scoring at home, Carrot Top, the funny little props-based Gallagher wannabe, really not that funny kind of guy, who is kind of scrawny and pale and pasty and stuff, is now juiced up like maybe he's headed for the WWF.
It is so just bizarre.
And he showed up at, what was that, the Country Music Awards?
Yeah, it was on the carpet for that whole business. And that was just way, way bizarre.
Plaid shirt, blue jeans, and ripped and chiseled, and I mean, you can't look at a photo like that, and his face is all screwed up looking like he's had work, and you can't look at that and go, wow, somebody's been injecting something somewhere.
Well, I have no idea how old, you know, I remember when Carrot Top was really, but that's been just years ago. I mean, how old is dude? He must be our age or older, right?
Gotta be. Maybe a little bit younger, but not much.
Okay. Because I was like, that just scared the hell out of me. Oh, and the only other thing I wanted to mention was, did you manage to read that article I sent you about the Medicare lawsuit stuff?
Yeah, I did.
I mean, I'm just like, wow, you know, I mean, it really is shocking that, yeah, I don't know. I don't even have time to discuss it, but it was just kind of a, you know, why is the Obama administration siding against people suing to get better service from Medicare, you know?
But, you know, there have been so many of those cases, you know, whether it was the DOMA or the Don't Ask, Don't Tell or gay marriage or Donald Rumsfeld being a torturer. You know, that was another one to put in the little win column. I don't know if you saw, but the Seventh Circuit is letting the lawsuit against Donald Rumsfeld as a torturer go forward. That, of course, has been defended by the Obama administration Department of Justice as being, well, you know, you can't do that.
Oh, I know. I thought that was really interesting. They're going to fight with all their might to preserve wrongdoing by high up officials as being okay. They're going to do whatever they can to stop that. So we'll see how that one goes. I know that one's really interesting to watch.
Oh, and by the way, just to indulge our shallowness, you're right. Carrot Top is 46.
Shut up! I knew it. I knew he was in our generation because I'm thinking Carrot Top. What? You know?
And just a complete horror show.
It is. It's really awful.
Suddenly, I don't feel so bad about being all white haired and white bearded and a little bit pudgy, or well, a lot pudgy around the gut and. No, because I don't ever want to look like that.
Exactly. No, I'm like, damn, okay, I'm a little fat, but Jesus. You know, that, no, I don't know what to say about him.
And that pic, and I know, we're talking about photographs, it's dancing about architecture, but that picture of him, and he's like, you know, kind of halfway, knees bent like he's doing the old, I don't know, like he's doing a dance number from Oklahoma about a Surrey with a fringe on top, for Christ's sakes. It was disturbing.
And he's pointing, that never-ending point, the two-handed point. I mean, it's so much fodder there. It's incredible.
Well, I'll have nightmares. Thanks a million, Sandra.
Yeah, no, you know, you're welcome. And like I said, I always feel the need to share. When my eyes are burnt out, I'm like, damn, maybe Bob might want to see this, too.
Well, thanks for the watch your eyes warning, you know, in the subject line. That at least I had a chance to get the Ray-Bans on.
Mind your eyes. Yes. All right, Bob. Have a good evening.
Have a good night, Sandra. Bye now.
Bye.
And we go forward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, riots are a product of economical times.
Seems kind of hard to avoid that conclusion.
And if you look at American history, our worst riots have always occurred, even if it's just in that community itself, during tough times, whether it's South Central at Rodney King, the late 60s, we had numerous riots in urban America, and guess what? The community who lived in those urban neighborhoods were the most economically depressed in the 1960s. They were also the ones most likely to serve in Vietnam, in a lot of the African American communities.
Well, you know, it's interesting. No, you mentioned that, and it's interesting also to note, I just got an email in from Mark Spike. A few years ago, a small startup was given the contract to maintain England's water and maybe increase its cost, too. The name of the startup was Azurix. That was Azurix owned by Enron. So, you know, it's all a matter of the people who are in fragile circumstances, economically downtrodden, whatever term you choose to use, are being squeezed in every way imaginably possible. And so, you know, I think your thesis holds.
And even if you look at, not counting sports-related riots, you know, Lakers fans and Vancouver BC hockey fans don't really apply to it, especially Canadian riots.
Tigers fans.
But as far as, I mean, you just look at any riot, there's always some sort of form of just factors leading up to it, and really the incident that causes the riot is just destroy it, breaks the camel's back. It's not really the source of the angst, you know, in France. And actually the biggest thing is anytime unemployment is real high in a community is when they're likely to start rioting. You know, even Katrina, times were tough for people in that area before Katrina hit. Obviously, it was an emergency and just downright survival. But, you know, a lot of it before the levees break, and, you know, people weren't living that good when the storm was about to hit anyways. I mean, again, that was another factor where even people who weren't quite in as much of need as others wouldn't likely to riot because, you know, the unemployment is high, prospects are low. That's becoming a global thing now because of greed.
Well, that, and there's no respite from it, right? There's no there's no way to get free of it. I mean, it's a you know, for all the, oh, well, I even object to the term rioting at this point. I don't know what other word is better suited, but to simply run riot means to do violence gratuitously, social violence done gratuitously without purpose. And I just don't think you can, I don't think you can do that here.
Without purpose would be inaccurate in describing what's going on here. And perhaps means are not correct, but there is a purpose driving all of this. And you know, it's one thing if it's just more regionalized, if it's just one country, or if it's just one community in a country, but it's becoming a global thing, and it's not going to end, especially considering the quarter, the world economy, and all these countries that work on business quarters. That isn't coming to an end just yet. And when the quarter comes to an end and these companies start giving off all these numbers of just how bad things have been this quarter, wait to see this market tumble even further. All I have to say is, ominous sounding as this is, we are about to embark on the second Great Depression. Just pray to God we don't have this one bookended with world wars.
It's, yes, I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. I don't see, well, even the economists with their little silk bow ties say we're not getting out of this mess anytime soon. And it certainly seems like with the latest surrender, we guaranteed that we're not going to get out of this mess.
No.
And under those circumstances, that's fertile ground for the germination of war.
And what went on in the United States has somewhat set off an early trigger in the world economy, and what went on with the debt ceiling debate and the whole, you know, should the rich people have to pitch in? Because the rich, you know, the whole reason some of these countries are in a pickle, you know, it's very convenient. The far right in this country used to love to tout the corporate tax rate in Ireland. They used to actually love to slightly misquote it and make it sound even lower than it was. And it was a bit too low as it was. Guess what? The reason Ireland was in trouble, it wasn't because of their universal health care.
No.
It was because the wealthiest weren't paying their fair share. You know, the same goes for Greece. The same goes for many other places. I mean, actually, the point you made previously with Sandra about the Olympics, there's a great example of the rich, you know, there's the case where poor people get screwed because the rich have an event to put on. You know, these are not the Olympic days of people just wearing a little bit of clothing or leaves.
Or well, you know, naked. The real right. Olympics were done naked.
These are the Olympics where Coca-Cola and Comcast, NBC Universal, and these giant juggernaut multinational corporations show up to make money. They make money like there's no tomorrow. The towns that show up there, right where the sun doesn't shine is where they get it. But the corporations make out like bandits. And it's the same going on when it comes to taxing and the entire world at this point. I mean, all the systems are somewhat rigged for the same corporations, and in large part because a lot of the same corporations have their fingers in every till, not just the nation they originated in that till. So, I think things are about to really hit the fan. The only reason we keep getting these little spikes.
But wait, Spike. While Sandra mentioned, you know, the flash mob business and so forth in some American cities, I know. Well, maybe this marks me as a Pollyanna, or maybe it marks me as having severely underestimated the discontent of the American people. But it ain't gonna happen here. The American people, even the most pissed off American people, don't have the gumption to get up out of their chairs. You know, there are protests.
We never have. We've always been the last.
Well, I mean, there was the Whiskey Rebellion and the Shays Rebellion, but that, you know, came and went like summer thunder.
But when you talk about global matters in American history, we've never been too quick to respond to any problems until it directly affects us.
No. And you know, I don't think anybody could rationally expect Barack Obama to really say anything. This is an internal UK affair, but it has roots in the global economy that was dreamed up by the neoliberals, the conservatives, the Clintonistas, these global trade agreements. I mean, it sort of beggars my brain, but these damn things have long, deep root causes that it seems from what I'm reading that the whole world is trying to avoid confronting. It's like the Anders Breivik business. Well, we can't talk about him being a Christian now, can we? Even though Christianity is rife with people who want to kill in the name of Jesus.
Oh, going back to the
origins of the church. Going back to the murder of, oh, God, what was her name in Alexandria? Fabulous movie, wonderful movie. It really moved me well. But, there's plenty of it.
Yeah, there's a long track record.
And the problem with refusing to address root causes, Spike, is that it means it comes back and comes back and comes back and comes back.
Yeah, well.
And nothing gets any better.
It'll continue to come back. It's the other countries will revolt first, and it isn't until Americans get a glimpse of what happens if they might speak up that they might dare speak up. It's the same anytime you hear Verizon workers around here are on strike.
Right, 45,000 people.
And the local news covers a story. Of course, they always find these dingbats to interview. The local cable news station found someone who... He certainly didn't look like he was of high income just by the T-shirt he had on and the amount of holes it had. Saying, you know, these times, they should be happy they even just have a job. You know, people wish they had jobs like that. And, you know, the local ABC affiliate has a little voicemail caller opinion thing they do at the end of their 5:30 news. And, of course, the first day, that's exactly the same sentiment you heard there. Today you heard one like that, and then one person, which... I'm shocked this anti-union station even put this one caller on after, you know, three anti-union calls were already aired, saying, you know, if it wasn't for these unions standing up, guess what? You'd have nothing. You know, all these people that are losing their jobs and everything, they're the ones without the union jobs that no one's sticking up for them, and the bosses just keep taking more and more, and the companies keep taking more and, you know, exterminating more and more jobs. Is that, you know, if these unions don't put up a fight, who is? You sit back and lose everything because that's what the rich people want you to do? Of course not.
No, of course not. Well, Spike, I got to roll out of here, but thank you very much for the observations. Trenchant as usual, my friend.
All right, have a good one.
All right, see ya. Bye now. Calling from the eastern side of Pennsylvania, that's our good buddy Spike. Just before we close out, I can't resist this because, well, it's too much to resist. But every time something like this happens, it's impossible to ignore the idea of the power of learning and knowing history. Because when you see people people's civil centers subjected to destruction caused by the unrest of those who have the least in a given society, if you know history, it's impossible not to say, well, hell, look at this. All these thousands of years go by, and we still haven't figured it out. I offer you the year 53 before the current era. Or as our good friend Eugene Finnerman would call it, 53 BCJ, before Cousin Jesus. I offer you a man by the name of Publius Claudius. He was a member of, he had been born patrician, but he had had himself adopted into a plebeian family. The Claudiuses, the C-L-A-U-D-I-U-S, Claudiuses, were among the most ancient and powerful families in ancient Rome. He had himself adopted at great controversy into the family of the Fonteii. And he renounced his patrician status in order to become a plebeian so that he could hold the office of tribune of the plebs. Patricians were not allowed to hold that office. He changed the spelling of his name from Claudius to Clodius, Claudius, and was a member of the party, the same party as Julius Caesar, the populares, the populars, the political wing that addressed the needs of the ordinary and working class and lower class of the Roman Republic. He became tribune of the plebs. And bear in mind, there had been a pair of brothers in the generation previous named Gracchi, who had proposed legal reforms that would have treated the working classes a little less monstrously, and the ruling classes assassinated them. Tiberius and Gaius Gracchus had assassinated them. Well, that one was assassinated, the other committed suicide before being assassinated. And every effort to introduce laws that would be a little less vicious toward the most fragile elements of that society were met with heavy-handed responses by the money. It is always the same. So that Publius Claudius becomes a tribune of the plebs. In 56 B.C., he becomes curule aedile, a sort of lower magistrate. And all these offices came with certain religious duties because state and religion were intertwined. They couldn't imagine breaking the two. And it got so hot that by 53 B.C., his arch-rival Milo, who was aligned with Pompeius Magnus, Pompey the Great, Claudius aligned with Caesar, they had their own street gangs. And it became horrible, these clashes between the gangs. But then, along about December the 6th of 53 B.C., Milo murdered Claudius on the Appian Way near a community called Bovilae. Upon the assassination of Claudius, his clientes, built his funeral pyre in the Curia, the Senate House, and burned that building to the ground, and burned a lot of the rest of the Roman Forum. Some of it was still unrepaired, some of it was still unrebuilt at the time of Julius Caesar's murder. Claudius's followers ran riot through the streets of Rome. And of course, they paid dearly in the civil wars and civil unrest that followed. There is always precedent, but not so much precedent. There is always history to teach us how these things work. And yet, time after time after time after time, through the years, through the decades, the centuries, the millennia, the generations, the rich always behave in the same way, thinking they can go on abusing the rest of the world and that the world will somehow just sit back and take it forever. That may be the case in the United States of America. We are a thoroughly anesthetized people. We will not get out of our chairs as long as the latest singing contest is still on Fox. And as long as kickoffs happen at 1 o'clock and 4 o'clock every Sunday in the fall. Not so the rest of the world. Not so the rest of the world. Because to the same extent that the rich do not learn, the poor remember. The rich do not learn, but the poor remember. And periodically it boils and bubbles up like some sort of ancient horror. And for a few brief days, they stand up and insist upon being counted, even if they are counted among those gunned down in the streets. And then the rich say, well, thank God, we've taken care of that. Let's get back to the business of looting. Because the real looters do wear bespoke suits from Savile Row. That's the program for tonight. Thank you all for tuning in. Thank you for your ideas, your phone calls. We'll be back tomorrow night with prayer meeting Wednesday. Thank you for your kind contributions. We close the program still in the hole for tonight's necessary fundraising goal. We'll just add that to tomorrow. It just makes it a little more difficult. But thank you for your kind contributions, all of you, each and every penny. It's what makes it possible for this to continue. Thank you to Lottie, our moderator in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Terribly sorry about not getting a show post out to you today, Susan. I was fooling with the water heater, trying to get it to work again. Oy, electricity, not my friend. Thank you to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to Reverbo, our op-ed columnist. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer, webmaster, web designer, show host extraordinaire in his own right. And thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, who makes all of the little electrons and packages do what they're supposed to do so this stream can reach you. Never sends a bill, but he too needs help, your help. Thanks, of course, to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. Rick Smith is next. And Gina, Judy.